What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger. Surprise with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we have a massive UFC event this weekend, one of the biggest pay-per-views of the year. UFC 322 goes down this Saturday, November 15th, and we have your predictions for all 14 currently taking place matchups. You never know with weigh-ins and sicknesses and injuries right before fights, but as of right now, we have 14 fights, the massive main event, Islam Makhachev, Jack Della Maddalena, and the massive co-main event, Valentina Shevchenko versus Zhang Weili. Going down, we got predictions, previews, all of that on today's episode. As well, we're going to be having our week 11 NFL quick picks. I believe we're already in week 11. The season is just flying by, and to be honest, I'm not that mad, as I have had quite the experience in fantasy football this year, so I can do without some NFL here and there. But no, guys, I have been so busy. I've just been swamped with work. I mean, I'm clocking 10-hour actual working days. I have to get up at 5 every day to go to the gym. I have to leave at 7:15 it is to go to my train. My train then leaves at 7:45. I might have to take the 7:30 now. I don't get home until around 7:45. I am a big commuter, so free time is not at the max. It really isn't, especially when I work Saturdays as well. But we still deliver on our podcast episodes, and that's what we are going to deliver to you guys today. And hopefully you have a little fun along the way. But yeah, kicking off the episode, we have no new UFC fights. And as far as the rankings are updated, Gabriel Blomfim moved up a couple spots. So we're going to get things going right away with our NFL Week 11 quick predictions. And after last week, I mean, I'm starting to get a read on the NFL. That's what I'll say. And as we kick things off on Thursday Night Football, this would have to be one of the bigger upsets of the entire season as the New York Jets travel to take on the New England Patriots. And all I'm going to say is that I'm riding with the Patriots all day. Jets are plus 550. Pats are all the way up to a minus 900 as of Wednesday at 8:56 p.m. And it's hard not to. The Patriots started out 1-2, haven't lost since. 5-0 on the road, 3-2 at home, 8-2 overall. They've been killing it. As for the Jets, 2-7, but I do want to add the Jets are on a two-game winning streak. Now, that is over the Bengals and the Browns, so not necessarily the two most impressive teams, but we literally have one of the worst teams in the AFC and quite literally maybe the best team in the AFC. So easy prediction here for the Patriots in terms of players for fantasy football. I mean, for the Jets, obviously, Breece Hall, Justin Fields, those will be your go-tos there. I don't know about Garrett Wilson. I don't know if he's been healthy at all. And for the Patriots, Drake May is actually currently the number one fantasy QB. Travion Henderson occasionally will pop off. And Stephon Diggs, if he has a good day, he's the man for you. And the Patriots defense, one of the better defenses. And the Jets, I do know, did have a good week last week. So we'll see what happens. Divisional matchups are always kind of a flip-flop. You never know what will happen. I always love to see upsets there. But yeah, I am going to go with the Patriots over the Jets. Then getting into our international game, I don't know exactly where it is located. I mean, I'm pretty sure we can just check right away here, but we have the Washington Commanders taking on the Miami Dolphins, and this game will be taking place in San Madrid. It's taking place in Spain. We have a Madrid game as the Commanders travel to take on the Dolphins, two teams which did have a lot of promise coming into the season, and as we now stand at week number 11, they're both 3-7 on the year, and it's been less than stellar. It really has. Now, Dolphins did pick up a win last week. That is right. They moved up to 3-7 following their shocking win over the Bills. But mind you, this is a Dolphins team which is just so prone to just randomly losing and randomly winning. There's not many consistencies we can look at. For the Commanders, it's been a very, very big letdown. They've actually dropped their last five games after starting 3-2. But I do think this is where their luck changes. I think this is where the tides turn. They're a little plus 130 underdogs, and they're in Madrid. Both teams are away. And you know what? I always love to go with the underdog there. I love to go with the team which hasn't been doing well as of late. And the Commanders are not nearly as good as they were last year. They're going to miss the playoffs, but I do think they'll win a game in Madrid over the Dolphins. And honestly, for fantasy, Devin Achane's a killer for the Dolphins. For the Commanders, I don't even know. Usually I would say Jaden McDaniels. Usually I would say Jackson Kroski-Merritt. He was having a good rookie year. Then I would say Terry McLaurin. But all three of those guys either hurt or just not doing anything. So going to go with the Commanders nonetheless. But Dolphins, there's potential. with them. We'll have to see. Next up, we get into our noon games back in America. That is, we had to do a little NFC battle here as the Panthers will be visiting the Falcons. Carolina Panthers are 5-5, coming in as the +150 underdogs. The Atlanta Falcons at 3-6 are the -175 favorites. And just two teams, impossible to pick. I mean, the Falcons are 3-6, four-game losing streak, and they've just been in the weirdest games. I mean, they played the 49ers close after knocking off the Bills. Then they get blown up by the Dolphins. Then they only lose to the Patriots because they couldn't bring it to overtime because they missed the extra point. And then the Colts win last week in overtime in just a super close game. So really tough to know what you're going to get out of this Falcons team. And as for the Panthers, they're frauds. They really are. This Panthers team is 5-5. And I wouldn't say frauds in the sense that they aren't good because, well, they're clearly adequate. But I would just say they're just not a team that's going to make a deep run. I mean, they'll beat the Packers. Then they'll lose by 10 to the Saints. Then they'll get blown up by the Bills. Then they'll beat the Jets. Then they'll beat the Cowboys. Then they'll lose to the Patriots. So I really like the Falcons here at home. I've liked what I've seen from them, especially when it comes to the Falcons versus the Panthers. The Falcons have done much better at home. Panthers have done just slightly worse on the road. This is where you see matchups take place where the Falcons can actually win. That is what we're going to go with here, the Falcons over the Panthers. Next up, this one may be game of the week, ladies and gentlemen, as the Tampa Bay Buccaneers travel to take on the Buffalo Bills. And Buccaneers came off the bye week and were unfortunately greeted with a defeat. Mind you, it did come against the number one AFC team, the New England Patriots. But they looked decent. You know, Baker Mayfield trying to get back to his ways without Bucky Irving in the mix. You know, Rashad White and Sean Tucker trying to step up. You know, Egbuka is obviously one of the best rookies of this entire draft class this year. So they couldn't get it done. On the other hand, the Buffalo Bills, very rough. They just did not look themselves against the Dolphins. I don't even know what it was. They couldn't do anything right. Turnovers galore. And this is coming from a team which just recently knocked off former Super Bowl contender in this past Super Bowl, the Bills, who beat the Chiefs. So no idea what you're going to get here. Yeah, no really idea. But what I've been seeing from the Bills is they do have a little pattern here so far. And I am noticing where it goes double win, double win. Actually, they started off 4-0. Then they dropped 2. Then they won 2. Then they lost last week. So maybe it would say the Buccaneers should win. But Bills at home is just too hard not to pick. I'm going to be honest. It's just too hard not to pick them. They've gone 4-1 at home. They're a 50-50 team. They usually play to the level of their competition. And I do think if it comes down to a shootout, which it will, I am going to favor Josh Allen leading his Buffalo Bills to a victory. Keeping our noon slate rolling, the Texans take on the Tennessee Titans in Tennessee. And this is a great opportunity for the Titans to win. I mean, they're 1-8, four-game losing streak, 0-4 at home. But it's the Titans. It's the Texans, which make me kind of think like, hey, is this team good? I don't know. But I will say they have played all their games close except for once they are winning. They played earlier the year in September, and they shut the Titans off. So as much as I would love to pick the Titans here, I am going to pick the Texans to get it done. And Nico Collins, do your thing. I will not be mad whatsoever. Next up, the Bears and the Vikings. I mean, this is probably the easiest pick you'll ever hear. The Minnesota Vikings, I know they're 4-5. I know I've messed on a lot of their predictions, but hey, it's Vikings versus the Bears. I have to root for the Vikings. I know the Bears have been on a tear, kind of 2 straight, 6-3, but they're no better than the Vikings. And the Vikings have done pretty good this year when playing NFC divisional opponents. And this is actually very fun to see, is that despite how bad we are, I mean, we have actually knocked off the Bears and the Lions. So we did beat the Bears in our season opener, won on a little game-winning kick, and I do think that'll be what takes place here. So I'm going to go with the Vikings over the Bears because, well, obviously I'm a Vikings fan, and I'm obviously not a Bears fan despite being in Chicago. Next up, Packers visiting the Giants in New York, and I shouldn't do it. I really shouldn't pick the Giants here. You know, the Packers, they've been through a little skid. Mind you, that skid is against, obviously, the Eagles and the Panthers. So hard to tell if it's really a skid or they're just falling off. But this Giants team just lost Jackson Dart. They did. No more Jackson Dart. And they are going to be starting, some reason, Jameis Winston. And I would hate myself if I didn't pick Jameis Winston, the Giants, to defeat the Packers. Right now, ESPN, 94% of users are picking the Panthers. They're minus 380. Giants are plus 290. If you want an underdog pick for this upcoming week, give me the New York Giants at home with Jameis Winston starting under center. If I found out Russ is starting, I'm going back and changing. I'm letting you know right now, I'm going back and changing if that's the case. But if Jameis Winston does start, you best know I am riding with Jameis Winston. They've only won two games this year. They both came at home. And for the Packers, they're falling off. They really are. Two losses, not looking good. And after that Eagles game, it is clear to see they're just not cut out for the big league. So we are going to go with the Giants over the Packers and probably my biggest upset of the week. Keeping our noon games rolling, Bengals visit the Steelers, and I think the Steelers team is good. I think they just occasionally run into some trouble, such as when they lost to the Chargers on Sunday Night Football, but hey, that's just how it goes. This Bengals team is no better. Two straight losses. They've given up 300 points. Very confident with the Steelers in this one, but I wouldn't mind if, you know, Jamar Chase Brown kind of went off. Do your thing, but yeah, gonna go with the Steelers in this matchup. And our final noon game, the Chargers visiting the Jaguars. This is going to be the biggest telltale sign that the Jaguars are frauds. They are just such frauds. They cannot get it done no matter what they do. And this Chargers team, they're 7-3, three straight wins. They've been looking like killers out there, and I think their killer instincts are going to wind on into week number 11. Give me the Chargers over the Jaguars. Feel kind of confident in that prediction. 3 o'clock matchups. Got a couple for you here. Seahawks taking on the Rams. This is going to be a fantastic matchup. I also think it's going to unveil that the Rams are the best team in the NFC West. Both teams are on a 4-game winning streak. Both teams are 7-2. They are just so similar. And one of the things I love to point out is the Seahawks are actually undefeated on the road. The Rams have only lost one at home. So this is going to be a close matchup, but I have seen from the Rams so far, I mean, they've been on a tear. 42 points the last week. 34 the week before, 35 the week before that. They have just been on a scoring spree, and I don't really see them slowing at all. So I am going to go with the Rams over the Seahawks. This could potentially be a Rams Super Bowl year, if you ask me. I'm excited to see this. Now I will be rooting for the Seahawks, as I do kind of like the Seahawks team. I don't know what it is. Sam Darnold, JSN, some about them. I just can't help but like them. But yes, I am going to go with the Los Angeles Rams, and Davante Adams, have yourself a game. Next up on our 3 o'clock slate, the 49ers visit the Cardinals, and I don't really know what I could do to pick the Cardinals. I don't think the Cardinals are going to lose out, but I certainly just can't bring myself to pick them. They are just so bad. They really are. And this 49ers team, look, yes, they lost last week, but it was to the Rams. Okay, other than that, you know, they've beaten the Giants, they've beaten the Falcons, they've beaten the Rams before this, so they split with them. And when these two teams played back in September, the game was close, but the 49ers came out on top. I think the same thing will happen here. Give me the 49ers on the road defeating the Arizona Cardinals. Then another fun divisional matchups, a lot of divisional matchups this weekend, as the Ravens will travel to take on Cleveland, and with Lamar under center, with Lamar healthy, this is an easy Ravens prediction. If I do find out he's out, I'm going with the Browns. Easy money. If Lamar's not in, the Ravens aren't winning. It's just a known thing, known commodity in the NFL. Then our final 3:30 game, or 3:25, Chiefs visiting the Broncos. And this is going to be very interesting. It really is. 7 straight wins for the Broncos. 5-0 at home. They're 8-2. The Chiefs suffered a tough loss to the Bills. But I will say, you know, the Chiefs are still the Chiefs. At the end of the day, the Chiefs are the Chiefs. And I know that this will be the first time these two teams are playing. But this just strikes me as it's just too obvious. The Broncos plus 170 underdog at home. It feels like everyone's going to be pouring money on them. And it's just a safe bet to go with the Chiefs. So I'm going to pick the Kansas City Chiefs here. I would love to see the Broncos keep winning, but I just don't think it's going to be the case. So I'm going to go with the Kansas City Chiefs. Mahomes, do your thing. Rashee Rice, do your thing. You know, all the boys, get it done, Kansas City Chiefs. Then with our final two games on Sunday Night Football, the Lions visit the Eagles. What a game. What a game. This is what Sunday Night Football should be all about. The 7-2 Eagles, who are 3-1 at home and are on a 3-game winning streak, take on the 6-3 NFC North leaders, the Lions. They have plus 83 points on the year. They have gone 3-2 on the road. I have liked what I've seen, but I am going to ride with the Eagles. I don't know what it is. I just feel like this Eagles team is good, especially at home. The Lions could mix things up, but this Lions team, I don't know with them. I really don't. There was potential for the Commanders to make a comeback, but their defense just couldn't stand tall. And one thing that I've seen, especially with the Vikings, is that you can make this Detroit Lions team crumble if you can match their pace and play a little bit of defense. And this Eagles defense is very talented. So I am going to go with the Eagles over the Lions and to go up to 8-2. With that, we get into our final matchup of week 11. It is the Cowboys visiting the Raiders on Monday Night Football. And I don't know what to do here. On the one hand, the Cowboys are 3-5-1. They've gone 1-4 on the road. They've lost two straight. And then they play the Raiders, who are just plain awful. 2-7, a three-game losing streak. They're 1-3 at home. And there's only one reason I'm going to pick the Las Vegas Raiders to beat the Dallas Cowboys, and that's because of Ashton Jeanty. I think Ashton Jeanty is going to have an amazing game, and that's the only reason I'm picking the Las Vegas Raiders. I got to pick some underdogs here and there. I can't pick every single favorite, and I do have a good mix of home and away teams. So those are my quick predictions for week number 11 of the NFL season, and we'll see how I do. You know, history, you know, we started the season off really good, and as history would say, I tend to kind of fade off towards the end of the year, but something we're not going to fade off in is our UFC prediction. So I'm too buzzing. I'm too excited. I have to dive into it. Here are your official predictions for UFC 322, potentially the biggest pay-per-view of the year. So let's dive right into it. Opening up the card, we are in the men's lightweight division, and we have the return of Slava Claus just in time for the holiday season as Vyacheslav Borshev takes on Matheus Jaguar Camilo. Vyacheslav is 8-6-1 professionally. Matheus is 9-3, 1 inch in height for Vyacheslav, and both men have a 69-inch reach, and both men stand in the orthodox fighting position. Vyacheslav is the favorite coming in here as, oh no, actually, he's the underdog, +135. Makes more sense here. Matheus Camilo is the -175 favorite. Vyacheslav is 33 years old from Russia, but now lives and trains out of Sacramento. Of his 8 wins, he has 6 wins by knockout, and of his 6 defeats, he's been submitted twice. He's gone 3-5-1 in the UFC, and after starting off red hot with a round 1 knockout, he fell victim to grappling in 2022, getting taken down 20 times over 2 fights, dropping 2 decisions. He would follow up with a nice knockout of Mahashat in May of 2023 before having one of the craziest draw fights you've ever seen against Nazim Sadikov to end out 2023. In 2024, he would lose by darkstroke to Chase Hooper in one of the biggest destructions I've ever seen of a one-sided fight. He would then defeat James Lontop in just a run-of-the-mill striking affair. And in 2025, he dropped a decision to Tom Nolan in February. And in June, got submitted in 55 seconds by Terrence McKinney. So, Vyacheslav hasn't really lived up to the hype he had coming in off of the Contender Series where he knocked out Chris Duncan. Talk about how crazy their careers have gone since then. And we'll see how he does against Matheus Camilo. Matheus is 24 years old from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Of his 9 wins, he has 4 KOs and 2 subs. All of his 3 defeats he has been submitted in, and he was actually supposed to fight October 25th at UFC 321 against Abdul Karim Al-Sawadi. Unfortunately, that fight never took place, resulting in the fact that his last fight was in May, where he made his UFC debut and was submitted by Gabe Green. The funny thing about that fight is that he was actually winning. That's right, he was working the takedowns, doing good, and then Gabe Green reversed it, took his back, and locked in the submission. So this one's tough. This one's super tough because clearly both of these guys are strikers, I would like to think. But if I'm being honest, this seems like a really good chance for either Matheus to just land a quick takedown and submit Vyacheslav Borshev, or for Vyacheslav to knock out none other than Matheus Camilo. So I don't really know. It's been a while since Vyacheslav got a knockdown. It's, in fact, been over 2 years. So I don't really know if he's back to those ways. I mean, it's hard to say as of late. You know, he's been a dog, but the takedowns have always kind of been his weakness. So it'll all depend on if Matheus can land this takedown, get the submission. But I'm going to say that this is not the end of Vyacheslav Borshev and that Vyacheslav Borshev lives on. And I'm going to pick Vyacheslav Borshev to get a round 1 knockout. That is right. Vyacheslav Borshev over Matheus Camilo. I'm hoping Slava Claus doesn't lose here, because if he does, he is going to get cut from the UFC. And I kind of like him. He's kind of a funny guy. Next up, middleweight division, as we get the return of Bosonger Hunter Susakarov, the greatest prospect off this past season of Dana White's Contender Series, as he takes on Eric McConkio. Bosonger is is 10-0. Eric is 10-3-1. 2 inches in height for Bossinger and 2 inches in reach. He fights in the Orthodox stance. Eric fights in the Southpaw stance. We actually have a crazy 11-year difference in age in this matchup. Bossinger is the biggest favorite on this card at -800, and for good reason. He is 24 years young. He is from Russia. Of his 10 wins, 9 finishes, including 8 by KO, one of them by sub, and of those 10 wins, 7 have ended in round number 1. He did fight last time out on Dana White's Contender Series in August of 2025, getting a 3-minute knockout. He would then return 4 days later at UFC 319, where he would, I think it was submit. Yeah, he submitted Eric Nolan in round number 2. Crazy. Crazy. This, I've never seen this. I've never seen someone come in and just take over like this. So you are going to see a lot of hype around Bossinger. I don't think his ceiling is Eric Bakanko, for goodness sakes. I think he's going to be a problem, and I can almost guarantee I'm going to predict him here, but I will give Eric Bakanko his shout out since I do think his UFC run will probably come to an end here. Eric is 35 years old. He is a +575 underdog. He is in California, but now has since transitioned to Arizona, where he trains out of the MMA lab. A lot of people train out of the MMA lab there. Henry Cejudo and Jared Cannonier. A lot of other fighters. Of his 10 wins, he has 7 finishes, 4 KOs, and 3 subs. And all 3 of his defeats, he's been knocked out in. He actually came in on short notice in February back in Seattle, where Nosutin Ruzoboyev knocked him out in round number 2. He would then come back against Cody Brundage and somehow win a split decision back in August. I mean, I did not have him winning that fight at all. In fact, I have no idea how anyone scored that fight for him, but it doesn't matter, because that fight sucked nonetheless. But I'm telling you right now, Bossinger, if he is everything we think he is going to make easy and light work of Eric Bakanko. There is no underdog winning here. Give me Bossinger Susakarov every single day of the working week. After that, we get our first of 3 women's matchups of the night. This one, a ranked women's strawweight matchup, as Angela Overkill Hill, the currently ranked number 12 women's strawweight, takes on the unranked, the Archangel, Fatima Klein. 18-15 is the long, illustrious career of Angela Hill as she takes on the 8-1 up-and-comer Fatima Klein. 3 inches in height for Klein is an advantage for her, as well as 3 inches in reach, 67 inches to 64. Both women stand in the orthodox fighting position, and you have a 15-year age gap taking place here. Angela Hill is the +335 underdog, but she just might be my favorite underdog pick of the entire night. Fatima Klein is the -450 favorite, but let's take a closer look at both of these ladies. So, Angela Hill, 40 years old, from California. Of her 18 wins, she has had 6 finishes over the time that her career has taken place, 5 KOs and 1 sub. Of her 15 defeats, she's only ever been finished twice, two times by sub. So she is a decision machine. And in fact, the last time that she was ever submitted, I mean, I don't even know, that was back in 2019. So it's been 6 years. And she did get finished last May of 2024. So, you know, she can't get the finish here and there. But yeah, Angela Hill, she's gone 13-15 in the UFC. It is crazy to think she came in 5-0 and has since gone on a crazy path. But yeah, I mean, she's been fighting with the company for 11 years strong. She's fought in Rose Namajunas, Jessica Andrade, Nina Nunez, Yan Chayonin, Loma Lukbumi, a notable name that we've recently seen fight, Michelle Waterson Gomez, Amanda Lemos, Firna Jandy Doba, Tisha Payton multiple times, Lupi Godinez, Denise Gomez. I mean, she is crazy, and you have to be pretty freaking good to defeat her. So we'll see if that goodness comes out of Fatima Klein, as the 25-year-old from New York comes in with 5 of her 8 wins coming by finish, 4 KOs and 1 sub, and she's a grappler. Straight out, she is a grappler, but she can also get it done in the striking department. She is as well-rounded as it gets. She's gone 15-6 in grappling over her grappling career. And in the UFC, she's gone 2-1. After debuting in July of 2024 and dropping a decision to Jasmine Jastudivicius, she's gone 2-0 in 2025, both with knockouts. Ground and pound victory over Victoria Dudikovov in the first event of the year, UFC Vegas 101. And then she knocked out Melissa Martinez with a nasty kick to the head back in July at UFC Nashville. I mean, holy cow. One of the better knockouts I've seen. So Fatima Klein, she can bring it. She can get it done. But I'm telling you right now, the ultimate gatekeeper of the division is Angela Hill. And I hate to say it, if she doesn't win here, this might be the last time we see Angela Hill. So I'm going to say if this is the end, I'm going out picking Angela Hill. That's like how John Cena's retirement tour is going to go. John Cena's final matchup, I don't care who he's facing, I'm rocking with him to get the job done. And in this case, I'm riding with Angela Hill. Next up, another banger. I can't tell you how much I'm excited for this one. Featherweight division as Pat Sabatini takes on Chepe Machine Gun Mariscal. Pat Sabatini is 20-5. Chepe is 18-6 with a no contest. 1-inch in height for Pat Sabatini and 1-inch in reach give him slight advantages. Both men fight of the orthodox fighting position. And Chepe is 2 years younger than Pat Sabatini. We'll start with the underdog here, Chepe Mariscal. He is the plus 105 underdog compared to the minus 125 favorite, which is Pat Sabatini. Chepe is 33 years old and fights out of Cicero, Illinois. If you didn't know, Cicero, Illinois is literally like right by me. Like, that's right in my area. Another fun fact, Al Capone had a home in Cicero. Did you know that? Now you do. Chepe has been taking the UFC by storm. He's on an 8-fight winning streak, dating pre-UFC. Trains out of Syndicate MMA, same gym as Rob Dovashelli, Khalil Roundtree Jr., and Nazim Sadiqov. Of his 18 wins, he has 10 finishes, 7 KOs, and 3 subs. And of his 6 defeats, he's been knocked out 3 times, but he hasn't lost since 2022. Coming into the UFC, I mean, he's been on a tear. Beating Trevor Peek in his debut, finishing Jack Jenkins, beating Morgan Sheree in a fight of the night, knocking off Damon Jackson, and in his fight earlier in the year against Ricardo Ramos, got the job done again. He's been impressive, 5-0 in the UFC, and now he faces his biggest grappling threat yet as he takes on Pat Sabatini. Pat Sabatini is 35 years old from Pennsylvania and of his 20 wins has 14 finishes, 1 KO, and a very notable 13 submissions. Of his 5 defeats, he's been KO'd 3 times and he's gone 7-2 in the UFC. Now, he did last fight in April, defeating Dre Anderson Brito in just a exhausting grappling matchup, 13 minutes and 47 seconds of control time. Yeah, that'll bore you to death. But in the meantime, he's gone out and picked up a win in, it might have been in May and August he won grappling matches. I know he's 2-0 in 2025 in grappling, so he's been staying active. And in terms of MMA, he's on a little 2-fight winning streak. Last loss, Diego Lopez, so that's not too bad. Pat's been pretty stellar in the UFC, biggest win of his career might be Joe Anderson Brito, now that I look at it. But in terms of this matchup, I've been loving Chepe Mariscal. I've been picking him every time he fights, and if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Plus, he's from Cicero, Illinois, so gotta root for him. Give me Chepe Mariscal, and I'm even gonna go with him finally getting an actual knockout in the UFC here with a little round one finish of Pat Sabatini. Moving up from featherweight to middleweight, we have Kyle Daukaus back for another fight this year as he takes on GM3, Gerald Meerschaert. Kyle Daukaus is 16-4 with 1 no contest, and he is the minus 350 favorite against the 37-20, absolutely insane 47-fight MMA veteran, Gerald Meerschaert, who is coming in as the plus 270 underdog. 1-inch in height for Kyle Daukaus, 1-inch in reach for Gerald Meerschaert. Both men fight in the southpaw position. Very rare you see two fighters both fighting with that left hand going first. We'll start with the underdog here, Gerald Meerschaert, and man, legend of the game. 37 years of age, same number of wins as his age. That is awesome. From Milwaukee, he has 6 KOs and 29 subs, giving him 35 of his 37 wins by finish, and he is a submission merchant, let me tell you that. Of his 20 losses, he has been finished 14 times. Surprisingly, 9 by sub, 5 by knockout. He's gone 12-12 in the UFC, so this will make or break it. For Gerald Meerschaert, will he go positive? Will he go negative? Tough to say. He's on a 3-fight losing streak and hasn't won since August of 2024. He's also 2-5 in his last 7. You could even bring up that he is 3-6 in his last 9, but Gerald has just been a victim of fighting tough competition. Some of his opponents since he came into the UFC in 2016, Thiago Santos, Jack Hermanson, Kevin Holland, Eric Anders, Khamzat Chimaev, Christoph Jocko, Joe Pfeiffer, Andre Petrovsky, Andre not so much, but prime Andre Petrovsky, and his last 3 losses, Rare Day Ritter, Brad Tavares, and Michael Olkajacek. So, GM3 is looking to bounce back, and he'll get a good opportunity, but unfortunately, it's against a man who has found himself a new place in the UFC, in Kyle Daukaus. Kyle is 32 years old from Philadelphia and currently rides a 5-fight win streak of his 16 wins, 13 finishes, 2 KOs, and 11 subs. Of his 4 defeats, he's been knocked out twice, and since leaving the UFC with a very unfortunate record of 2-4 with 1 no contest, he would actually come back on short notice at UFC Shanghai and knock out Michelle Pereira in 43 seconds, just shocking everyone. And now he's getting another opportunity to do it against Jiro Mearshard. I like it. On this little 5-fight winning streak, he's had 4 finishes. Give me Kyle Daukaus all freaking day. I'm confident in Kyle. I just think the changes he's made, the adjustments he has made, are proving to be beneficial to him, especially since he's now unlocked the ability to knock out guys. I don't know if Michelle Pereira is just absolutely washed, but from what I saw, Kyle Daukaus just looked on absolute fire, and I think that fire is going to continue to burn. My fire burns, you could say. Used to be Randy Orton's old theme song name, but I think it's going to continue here. Give me Kyle Daukaus over Jiro Mearshard, and let's keep the train rolling. Let's give me a little round one knockout. I love it. Next up, bantamweight division. Malcolm the Machine Wellmaker takes on Cody Haddon. And, you know, similar to my NFL quick picks, I could easily just tell you right now I'm picking Malcolm Wellmaker, but I still got to give these guys their props. I still got to give it to you. And by the way, Malcolm is only a minus 145 favorite, oddly, which I do find a bit odd. Cody Haddon is only plus 125, so clearly the odds makers see something in Cody Haddon. Malcolm is 10-0 undefeated. Cody is 8-1. 3 inches in height for Malcolm and 2 inches in reach for Malcolm give him an advantage there. He fights in a switch stance. Cody remains in the orthodox fighting position. Malcolm Wellmaker coming in is 31 years old and is still a prospect. Funny how that works. He is from Atlanta, Georgia, and has 8 of his 10 wins by finish, 6 KOs and 2 subs. He was actually supposed to fight Sergey Sadé here, but instead will be taking on Cody Haddon. Malcolm came into the UFC in 2025 and knocked out Cameron Tayman in under 2 minutes. He would then take on Chris Muatino in UFC Atlanta and faceplant KO him back in June. 2 fights in the UFC, 2 performance bonuses, also had a round one knockout on the Contender Series a year ago. This man is an absolute problem. So all we can do is pray for Cody Haddon. But hey, don't knock out Cody, man. I mean, this guy's 27 years old from Australia. He's on a 6-fight winning streak of his 8 wins, 7 finishes with 5 KOs and 2 subs. And he was actually supposed to fight Alexander Topuria way back at UFC 312. He pulled out, probably for the best, but the UFC is, I think, taking notice, and they've said, hey, we need to get this guy a high-level opponent. Last time he fought was in October of 2024. He beat Dan Argueta by unanimous decision on an Apex card, so we'll see how he does here, but yeah, Malcolm Wellmaker, round one knockout. I feel like I'm on a trend of round one knockouts. Don't worry, that's not going to continue. But yeah, I'm fairly confident that Malcolm Wellmaker is going to make easy work of Cody Haddon. Next up, a very high-level women's flyweight matchup as the number 4-ranked Erin Blanchfield takes on the number 8-ranked Tracy Cortez in a rematch a number of years in the making. Erin, cold-blooded Blanchfield, new nickname there. I like it, Erin, is 13-2. She comes in as the minus 235 favorite against Tracy Cortez. No nickname for the 12-2 professional record of Tracy Cortez. She's a plus 195 underdog. She holds 1 inch in height over Erin Blanchfield, and Erin has 1 inch in reach over her, and both women fight in the orthodox fighting position. There is a 6-year age advantage for Tracy Cortez, but I guess you could say maybe being younger would be an advantage. I don't know. It's always interesting how they view it, but Erin Blanchfield, always been high on her. The 26-year-old is from New Jersey and has 6 of her 13 wins by finish, 2 KOs, and 4 subs. She's never been finished in both of her decision losses. She was actually supposed to fight Macy Barber back on May 31st, and little did we know is that Macy Barber pulled out right before walking out in the main event. I have never seen that. I don't know if I ever will. But Erin Blanchfield was blessed to be able to get a fight in November of 2024, so it's only been, I guess, a full year since she's last fought. Okay, there's not much benefits here. So Erin has been an active. Last time she lost was Manny Fiora back in March of 2024. Before that, last time she lost, 2019, to Tracy Cortez. So Erin Blanchfield, she's been dominant. She's beaten Molly McCann, Jessica Andrade, Talia Santos. Last time she won, Rose Namajunas, a 5-rounder. So Erin can clearly hang. It's just a matter of how will she look after being off for a while. Thankfully for her, I mean, Tracy Cortez hasn't been, like, that much more inactive. She has 1 fight in June, which was a decision over Vivian Arujo. Nothing necessarily mind-blowing. She's a 31-year-old from Arizona and has 1 KO and 1 sub. And of her 2 defeats, she has been submitted once. That's right, decision machine. She's 6-1 in the UFC, holds wins over Jasmine Jastavicius, like I mentioned, Vivian Arujo, and I'll even throw in Melissa Gatto in there, because why not? Her lone decision loss was to Rose Namajunas when she stepped in on short notice to fight her in a main event. That was back in July of 2024, so we'll see how this one goes. I do think Erin Blanchfield wins the rematch. I think she has shown more improvement. I do think her grappling is a bit more superior. I am going to go with the decision here, but if you are going to see a upset in terms of Tracy Cortez winning, you could then reference the fact that she has beaten her before. But I think Erin Blanchfield has made the adjustments, has been looking good, and I'm going to give her the win in this contest. Two more prelims to hit you guys with, as we have Roman Kopylov taking on Gregory Rodriguez, and this one's tough. This one really is tough because both of these guys have been given shots repeatedly to break into the middleweight division and just can't. So this will truly prove who is ready for the top 15 to get another shot and who is not going to be getting another shot at the top 15. But Roman Kopylov is a plus 135 underdog. He is 14-4. Gregory RoboCop Rodriguez is the minus 160 favorite. He has a 17-6 professional record. He has a 3-inch height advantage. Both men have the 75-inch reach. Southpaw for Roman, orthodox for Gregory Rodriguez. And I'm excited for this one. This is a striker's delight, is all I'm going to say. Roman Kopylov is 34 years old from Russia, and of his 14 wins, has 12 KOs. Of his 4 defeats, he's been submitted in half of them, and he has gone 6-4 in the UFC. Started off pretty rough, 0-2 back in 2019 and 2021, before going on a 4-fight, all-knockout streak, including 2 head kick knockouts and multiple body shot knockouts. He would then lose to Anthony Hernandez in February of 2024, but Anthony Hernandez is in his prime, so we'll give him a bit of leniency there. He would then come back with a win over Cesar Almeida, and his win on the first event of the year in this year, 2025, knocking out Chris Curtis with a second left, was so impressive. He would then get, for some reason, a co-main event opportunity on the Dustin Poirier retirement card against Paulo Costa. He would get his butt absolutely whooped through the first 2 rounds and then rally in the third to really no avail, just never really poured it on even when he rocked Paulo Costa. So did not see the killer drive there from Roman Kopylov, and it really showed me he's maybe not cut out for this whole UFC thing. No, I'm absolutely kidding there. He would kick my butt. But yeah, I liked more from what I saw of Gregory Rodriguez in his bounce back fight of the year. Gregory started out the year in very impressive fashion. Got a main event taking on Jared Cannonier, and he almost knocked him out in round number 1, and then in round number 2, and then he started to fade in round number 3. In round number 4, he could barely stand and was knocked out in the early stages by Jared Cannonier. But RoboCop is only 33 years old, born in Brazil, but now fights out of Florida. Of those victories of 17, he has 14 finishes, which we really like to see. 10 KOs and 4 subs. Of his 6 defeats, he's been finished 4 times by knockout, and he's gone 8-3 in the UFC. Now, however, opposed to Roman Kopylov starting the year with a bang and kind of ending it, but halfway through kind of having an L, on that exact same month of June, you would actually see an amazing performance from none other than Gregory Rodriguez with one of, the best knockouts. I mean, just absolutely slumped Jack Hermanson, hits him with a hook, and Jack just falls directly backwards. Performance bonus. It was amazing, and simply because of that, I'm riding with Gregory Rodriguez again. I mean, I have always known there's potential with Gregory Rodriguez, and I just think Roman Kopylov always does best when he can just kind of fight technical and his opponent just stands in front of him. When pressure's put on him, he usually cracks. And in this case, I think you might see him get knocked out for the first time in his career. I think Greg Rodriguez is coming in hungry. He has just always been so freaking close and has always just fallen a bit short. So, going to be rooting for Greg Rodriguez in this contest. Hoping it is done. We'll have to see. Should be close. And then we get into our final prelim, and it is Bo Nickel taking on Rodolfo Vieira. This was actually supposed to be on the main card, and there was a bit of an outcry from the fans. I know no one will admit it, but everyone was like, Bo Nickel does not deserve to be on the main card. This is ridiculous. And the UFC kind of just changed it without really being like, oh, we're changing this. But look at that. Bo Nickel comes in, minus 230 favorite, always a favorite, as he takes on the plus 195, the black belt hunter, Rodolfo Vieira. Bo is 7-1. Rodolfo is 11-3. 1-inch in height for Bo and a notable 3 inches in reach. He fights in the southpaw stance. Rodolfo fights in the orthodox fighting position. 7-year age gap is what makes this notable. And coming in, Bo is 29 years old from Colorado. But as you all know him, he is a Penn State boy through and through. Trains out of American Top Team, and 6 of his 7 wins are by finish, 2 KOs and 4 subs. He did win a grappling match, actually, in August, so after losing his first professional fight in May, he has gone out and gotten a little victory. His first loss, co-main event opportunity to Rainer de Ridder, which, if a win has ever aged somewhat decently good, I'll say it was Rainer de Ridder. After he, you know, beat Bo Nickley, went on and beat Robert Whittaker, so we do have to give him some leniency, but what you have seen with Bo Nickel is that the harder competition he fights, the more average he has looked. And I hate to say it, this is a very make-or-break opportunity for him. And I would really love to see him get this done. But it's going to be tricky against a guy with a very, very good BJJ background in Rodolfo Vieira. 36 years old, the underdog is from Rio de Janeiro. And of his 11 wins, he has 10 freaking finishes. 1 KO and 9 subs. Of his 3 defeats, he's only ever been submitted once. He's gone 6-3 in the UFC, and after dropping a decision to Andre Petroski in February, would pick up a decision win over Trayshawn Gore in August. He's gotten round 1 arm triangles, round 2 arm triangles, round 3 rear naked chokes, and you know what? All sorts of stuff galore. He has had 4 arm triangles in the UFC, so I will say that is his go-to. And his only losses, Anthony Hernandez, Chris Curtis, and Andre Petroski. Not too bad. And even that Andre Petroski fight was kind of up in the air if he had won or lost that. So this is going to be very close. I am going to continue to ride the Bo Nickel hype trim, so I am going to pick Bo Nickel to win. But I'm going to be honest, Bo cannot get caught. Bo needs to stay on the offensive. And if I'm Bo Nickel, I want to keep this on the feet. All right, it has been pretty evident from the Cody Brundage fight, from the Armin Petrosian fight, even from, I'd say, the Dustin Stolfus fight. I mean, if this fight is fought on the feet, this favors Bo Nickel, despite his grappling background. If it goes to the ground, there is danger of a submission. So, I'm going to go Bo Nickel. I'm going to say decision here, or potential for a knockout, kind of like the knockout, but I have predicted a lot of knockouts. So, we'll see what happens, but that'll close out the prelims, and it'll bring us into a main card, which is probably the best main card of the entire freaking year. Getting into the main card, one of my favorite fighters on the roster, Benoit Saint-Denis, opens it up against Beneil Dariush as we get a little lightweight ranked action here. Very excited for this one. The number 13th ranked Benoit Saint-Denis takes on the number 9 ranked Beneil Dariush. And heading into this contest, I mean, Beneil Dariush is 23-6-1, so he has had 30 professional MMA fights. He is the plus 155 underdog. The minus 190 favorite is the God of War, Benoit Saint-Denis. He has gone 15-3 with one no contest in his professional MMA career. He has 1 inch in height and reach over Beneil Dariush, and both men fight southpaw. So funny, multiple fighters on this card both fight southpaw in the same fight. Very rare that you see that, just letting you all know that. For Beneil Dariush, he's coming into this contest 36 years old, of course, from Iran. Now he fights out of California. 13 of his 23 wins are by finish, 5 KOs and 8 subs. In all 6 of his defeats, he has been finished in 5 by knockout, once by submission. He has gone 17-6 with 1 draw in the UFC, and he's coming off a win. That's right, he miraculously beat Hinato Moicano after almost getting knocked out in round number 1. Absolutely massive fumble by Hinato Moicano. It helped Beneil Dariush snap a little 2-fight losing streak he had in 2023. And other than that, Beneil's been pretty good. You know, I'd say this new version of him post-2018, he's been an absolute stud. His only losses, Charles Oliveira and Armin Sarukian. So I do really like Beneil Dariush's odds here. However, I will say he's getting older, and the one thing he hasn't been looking is better. Now, one man who has been looking better, bouncing back from adversity, is Benoit Saint-Denis. The God of War is 29 years old from France, and of his 15 wins, has 15 finishes. 4 KOs and 11 subs. He is a wrecking ball. 2 of his losses have come by knockout, meaning only one of his fights has ever gone the distance. He's gone 6-3 in the UFC, and he's been dominant, you know, submitting Ismael Bonfim, knocking out Thiago Moises, knocking out Matt Frivola, and in 2025, 2 wins, 2 round 2 submissions, including submitting Mauricio Ruffi in Paris in one of the biggest wins he has had in a long time coming. I will say, Benoit Saint-Denis, I rock with him every single time. I generally have picked him in every single fight. I love Benoit Saint-Denis. I think he is deserved of a good shot here, opening up the main card. And with a win here, that would be 3 straight, and he would be in the top 10. So really hoping that Benoit Saint-Denis pulls this through. I am a massive fan of his, and we'll see how he does in this matchup. Next up, I mean, this is just a highlight reel of Zach's favorite fighters. I mean, this is why this card is easily one of my most favorite ones of the year. Welterweight division top 10 action is the number 4 ranked Leon Edwards takes on the number 9 ranked Carlos the Nightmare Prates. Big Carlos Prates supporter here. Big Carlos Prates fan here, let me tell you that. Now, Leon Rocky Edwards, plus 175 underdog. Underdog yet again against Carlos Prates, who is a minus 210 favorite. Leon is 22-5 with one no contest. Carlos is 22-7. 1 inch in height for Leon, but 4 inches in reach for Carlos Prates. Leon fights southpaw. Carlos fights in a switch stance, and he has a two-year, I don't know how to say ages. He's 2 years younger than Leon Edwards. I mean, I don't know if it's an advantage being older or younger, but for Leon Edwards, hard fall from grace. Really is. 34 years old from England. 10 of his 22 wins are by finish. One of his 5 losses has come by sub. He's gone 14-4 in the UFC and was originally supposed to fight Jack Della Maddalena back in March. Instead, he got Sean Brady, and Sean Brady absolutely destroyed him in the grappling realm and submitted him in round number 4. Now, as a man who picked Sean Brady, I was very happy. As Leon Edwards fans, I'm sure you weren't too happy. Leon just hasn't been the same, you know, in this new era of Leon Edwards since 2021. I poked Bilal Muhammad, fought Nate Diaz in a co-main event at UFC 263. That fight's only remembered for the last second almost knockout Nate Diaz landed. Then he's getting dominated by Kamaru Usman. He then knocks him out with a minute left. The rematch then sucks. The Colby Covington fight sucks. Bilal Muhammad takes the belt from him in July of 2024. It's been a rough few years for Leon Edwards. No one's been really giving him that much respect. And that last second head kick knockout has kind of become his entire brand and staple. So Leon comes in, 2-fight losing streak, looking to turn the tide and end the year with a bang. Unfortunately, he takes on a knockout max. He takes on a knockout master in Carlos Prates. 32 years old from Brazil, 20 of his 22 wins are by finish with 17 KOs and 3 subs. Of his 7 defeats, he's been finished 5 times, but since coming into the UFC last year, he was the rookie of the year. 4 wins, 4 knockouts, and start off the year rough. Took on Ian Garry in his first main event back in April and just kind of froze up. Just kind of wasn't ready, but came back in August and landed one of the nastiest knockouts of the year. With a second left in round 1, he landed a spinning back elbow and put Jeff Neal's lights out cold. I was going ballistic. It was absolutely amazing. And let me just tell you something right now. If this fight is fought in how Carlos Prates can fight a fight, he'll pull Leon out of there. Like, I'm telling you right now, I think Leon can get past round 1, but if it goes to round 2, I'm going with Leon Edwards getting knocked out here. Carlos Prates all day. The nightmare strikes again. Lands another knockout. Take it to the bank. Write it to your mother. That is what's going on. Carlos Prates defeating Leon Edwards and jumping into the top 5. And after start of the year, I thought Carlos Prates was done. There's no chance he'd get back to the top of the division. And this is where he comes back and enters the fold. That is right. Carlos Prates over Leon Edwards. I absolutely love it. Sticking with the welterweight division, I don't know how to say this, but this may be the most high-level matchup since Islam Makhachev versus Alexander Volkanovski, their first contest. I kid you not here. You have the number 2 ranked welterweight in the world, Sean Brady, who is 18-1, taking on the number, where is Michael Morales at now? Number 8 ranked welterweight, Michael Morales, who is 18-0. Minus 150 for Brady, plus 125 for Morales. The odds are as close as ever. This is so high level. It really is. You get a little bit of 2 inches in height for Michael Morales and a very notable 7 inches in reach. 79 inches is 72. Both men fight in the orthodox fighting position, but this is going to be crazy. This is going to be insane. I mean, I'm telling you right now, there is a reason this is the third fight from last on such a big card. So, Sean Brady, 32 years old from Philadelphia, has 9 of his 18 wins by finish, 3 KOs and 6 subs. His one loss was a TKO loss to, funny enough, Bilal Muhammad. Absolutely love that. Other than that, he's gone 8-1 in the UFC. Wins over Jake Matthews, Michael Chiesa, Calvin Gastelum, Gilbert Burns in a main event, and earlier in the year, of course, defeated Leon Edwards, as we just mentioned. So Sean Brady is coming in with some high momentum. Last 2 wins were main events, so this will be a 3-rounder. He went to rounds 5 and 4 in those, so he should be a bit more fresh here. We'll see how he looks, but he is taking on a man who is looking dangerous as ever, Michael Morales. Michael is 26 years young from Ecuador, but now fights out of Mexico. Of his 18 wins, he has 14 finishes, 13 KOs and one sub, and he is a perfect 6-0 in the UFC. Knockout of Trevin Giles. Knockout of Adam Fugit. Decision wins over Max Griffin and Jake Matthews. Knockout of Neil Magny. And his lone fight this year was a main event against Gilbert Burns. Ran through him in under 4 minutes. So, I don't know how this one's going to go. But from what I've seen, Sean Brady has unreal grappling. Michael Morales has shown phenomenal takedown defense. I mean, when Gilbert took him down, he was able to get up right away. And same thing happened with Trevin Giles and Adam Fugit. Every time someone's taken him down, he has knocked them out. So I think you see round one, Sean Brady kind of, you know, take it to Michael Morales. Maybe at the end of it, Michael stuns him. We get into round two. Michael catches him on the feet. I've seen Sean Brady not be able to eat some shots before. That was for Bilal Muhammad. So going to go with Michael Morales here. He's a nice little underdog prediction, and I've kind of fallen more in love with him. But like I said, if Sean Brady wins, I'm not going to be pissed at all. This is just so high level. It's literally a flip of a quarter, heads or tails. And for me, I'm flipping it, and it's landing on Michael Morales. Then heading into our co-main event, it is one of the biggest women's fights of all time. Dare I say, could be the second biggest. I don't know. I feel it could be the first biggest. I don't know. It is up there all time. It is the double championship opportunity for Zhang Weili moving up in weight to take on Valentina Shevchenko, your former women's strawweight champion, but that's just because they made her vacate it with the new way UFC does things. Takes on the current women's flyweight champion, Valentina Shevchenko, to try and become a double division champion. Valentina is currently your favorite at minus 130. Zhang Weili is the underdog at plus 110. But the odds are very close. Valentina, the Bullet, is 25-4 with one draw. In her professional MMA career, Zhang Magnum Weili is 26-3. 1 inch in height for Valentina and 3 inches in reach give her tiny advantages. She also fights southpaw. Zhang Weili fights switch stance. When you're an age, separate them. Like, these two are very evenly matched. Valentina Shevchenko, who is currently the number one pound-for-pound woman on the planet, is 37 years old from Kyrgyzstan. She has 8 KOs and 7 subs of her 25 career victories. Of her 4 defeats, she's only ever been finished twice. She's gone 14-3 with a draw in the U.S. FC and as of late is on a 2-fight winning streak. She had a title defense earlier in the year over Manon Fiorot, edging her out with a 48-47 unanimous decision. But Valentina has been utterly phenomenal in the UFC. Only 2 women have beat her. That's Amanda Nunes twice and Alexa Grasso once. So Valentina last fought in May. We'll see how she does. She's been on an absolute tear. This is the fight that makes sense. And we'll see how she does as she fights the challenger, Zhang Weili. Zhang Weili is 36 years old from China, but now trains out of Las Vegas. Currently on a 5-fight winning streak, 19 of her 26 wins are by finish, 11 KOs and 8 subs. Of her 3 defeats, she's only ever been knocked out once. That was her last loss. I forgot there was a rematch. She last got knocked out by Rose Namajunas. Last loss, November 2021 to Rose Namajunas. She's gone 10-2 in the UFC, and on her current winning streak, she has knocked out the former champion, Joanna Jędrzejczyk, in round number 2, submitted the former champion Carla Esparza to win the belt, sent away title challengers Amanda Lemos, Yan Chona, and Tatiana Suarez with dominant decisions. She has ran through the women's strawweight division. This is the fight that makes sense. And as far as my breakdown goes, like, I'm going to be honest, it's very even. It's pretty much just who's going to technicality-wise outmaneuver the other. And for striking and grappling and just literally everything, these are just the different versions of women in the weight class. I will say, as far as weight goes, Valentina will have the advantage, but Zhang Weili's been bulking up. She looks muscular. She's also very strong, and I'm seeing a 5-round war. I really am, and I think this is going to be one of those fights. Zhang Weili's landing big striking moments, then Valentina answers. Then, oh, Valentina lands a takedown. Oh, Zhang Weili gets back up, lands her own takedown. I am going to say I will give grappling to Valentina and striking to Zhang Weili, and that's at like 51% to 49% margins. Like, that's how I'm viewing that. So this is another flip of a coin. This is why this card is as amazing as it is, but I am going to say it's been a long time coming. I'm surprised it took us this long, but I do think that Zhang Weili will become a women's flyweight champion, a double women's weight division champion, defeating Valentina Shevchenko. And I think that it's going to go round one for Zhang Weili, Round 2 and 3 for Valentina. Round 4 and 5 for Zhang Weili. That is my order of rounds. We will revisit and see. But I don't know. I'm so pumped for it. I cannot wait. And it's going to be a fantastic fight. Which brings us to our main event. One of the biggest main events of the year. We've seen double champions already come about with Ito Piera. And we have another opportunity here as the number one pound for... Actually, I forgot he was knocked off. The number two pound for pound fighter on the planet, Islam Makhachev, takes on the number 8 ranked pound for pound fighter, Jack Della Maddalena. And why is he taking him on in this big matchup? Well, you may be wondering. Well, let me just tell you right now, it is because he's trying to also become a double division weight champion. That's right. Islam Makhachev vacated his lightweight belt and has moved up to welterweight to become a double weight champion. And I love his odds here. Oddsmakers have him at minus 250. JDM, your current champion, is at plus 210. And honestly, I can kind of see why. But looking at the matchmaking here, 18-2 record for Jack Della Maddalena, 27-1 for Islam Makhachev. The winning streaks, 18 straight wins for Jack Della Maddalena. That's just overall career. In terms of UFC, he comes in with a 8-0 record. For Islam Makhachev, he is on a 15-fight winning streak. He will tie the longest in UFC history, Anderson Silva's, if he wins. Now, 1 inch in height for Jack Della Maddalena, 3 inches in reach. That's about all I can see in terms of size. But in terms of stance, switch stance for Jack Della Maddalena, southpaw for Islam, these two are about as even as you can get. So starting us off here with the current champion, Jack Della Maddalena from Australia, 29 years old, 12 KOs and 2 subs give him 14 of those 18 wins by finish. Both of his losses he has been finished in, but that was way long ago. And like I said, 8-0 in the UFC. Came in off a Dana White's Contender Series and followed it up with 4 straight round 1 finishes. He would then have a great fight of the night fight, defeat Kevin Holland, would ultimately defeat Gilbert Burns and come back at the year, in my opinion, last year. And then earlier this year was not supposed to be the one to fight Bilal Muhammad. It was supposed to be Shavkat Rakhmonov. Instead, JDM steps in and wins the belt in a fight of the night. One of the better championship fights of the year. So JDM coming in is your current champion, knocked off Bilal Muhammad. But if you thought Bilal's grappling was good, JDM, just wait to take on Islam Makhachev. 27-1. The 34-year-old is from Dagestan. As you know him, he is Khabib's best buddy. 15 straight wins, 5 KOs and 13 subs give him 18 of those 27 wins by finish. He's gone 16-1 in the UFC. He was supposed to fight Armin Sarukian earlier in the year at UFC 311. Instead, he took on Hanan Moicano, who stepped in on short notice. He made quick work of him. He also defeated Dustin Poirier last year. He also defeated Volkanovski twice. He also has defeated Charles Oliveira. This man is a killing machine, and I absolutely love it. On this winning streak of 15 straight wins, he has racked up a very impressive almost 10 finish. I think it's at 9. It's either 9 or 10 finishes. He's been an absolute tear, and if you thought I was picking against Islam Makhachev, you're absolutely ridiculous. I hate to just write off JDM, but like, I'm going to be honest, I genuinely feel like Islam is going to run through him, take him down, drown him, submit him. I think it's that simple. And I think it's that easy. And there really isn't that much analysis needed. Like, Islam Makhachev is just that good. I feel like, if anything, we're just waiting for the crowning of Islam Makhachev. So it's going to be an amazing main event. I cannot wait. I'm going to be watching it no matter what state I'm in, no matter where I'm at. I will be watching this matchup. But yeah, JDM's only hope, defend the takedowns, land a knockout punch, maybe go the distance. I don't know. But in all reality, this appears to be an Islam Makhachev win in the bag. But yeah, those are my predictions for UFC 322. Let me know who you guys are going with. Also, let me know your NFL Week 11 quick predictions. I mean, it's 10:30 right now, and I have to be up at 5 a.m., so that's not very desirable. I also don't think it's very ethical that I have to get up that early, but it's my own fault. I've been dealing with all sorts of things. So, without further ado, ladies and gentlemen, you guys have an amazing weekend. Make sure you get all your predictions in for UFC 322, and I'll catch you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.